Roger Waldron's president of the Coalition for Government Procurement, writing on the Far and Beyond blog about GSA schedules modernization. I imagine, Roger, when you first learned about this, you probably were happy about the concept, at least, because you've been talking about modernizing the schedules program for a long time, haven't you? Is there something they got wrong in the execution, or are you? Why are you? It sounds like you're a little apprehensive about this.
To big picture, part of schedules modernization that we have been talking about for the last two or three years includes this, the initiative of consolidating the GSA schedules program, sort of merging schedules together. That's exactly what the professional services schedule consolidation initiative is all about. It's about reducing the number of contracts. In the professional services arena under the schedules, companies could have four or five contracts covering various professional services, whether it's, management consulting or professional engineering or financial consulting support. And they had to have separate contracts for each of those type of services. Now, with this consolidation initiative, they have the opportunity, if it makes good business sense for them, to consolidate under all those services under one contract. They could reduce their contract administration costs. Presumably, GSA will be able to reduce its contract administration costs and also be able to more effectively present the services that they provide to their customer agencies. So that's why it's one, and that can be replicated through other schedules for products as well. That consolidation effort where companies have multiple contracts across their various product lines. So there's an opportunity for savings there. There's an opportunity for enhanced market research for customer agencies. It is a good thing. Make no mistake about it. And that's why it's something that the coalition has been supporting for about 4 or 5 years now. So we're gratified to see GSA, at least in the professional services arena, tackle that issue. But to your point,
yep.
There are other areas where we scratch our head, and industry actually is profoundly disappointed in the progress GSA has not made. And in particular, I want to talk about other direct costs, which is a service-related issue. And that's an initiative that was the first issue that members brought to me when I came to the coalition 4 years ago, that the ability to add materials and other direct costs to services orders the schedules did not provide for that. Even though the FAR, the Federal Acquisition Regulation, provides commercial terms that allow materials and other direct costs to be included on commercial item task orders for services. So the FAR already covers this. And contractors under the schedules repeatedly say, customer agencies say, I would use the schedules, but I can't get my complete solution because I can't buy materials. I can't acquire the other direct or pay for the other direct costs that I need for a complete solution. The coalition wrote a white paper on it, provided a sort of a roadmap to addressing the issue. And granted, I understand the government may not completely agree, but here's something that was already in the FAR, that already was covered by commercial item contracting. The schedules are commercial item contracts, and we're talking 4 years later, and GSA's made no progress in this area. It increases contract duplication because customer agencies, can't use the GSA schedules for their service solution, so they create their own contract to address those concerns. There's this big sensitivity to contract duplication at OFPP right now. It's been mentioned in various memos. They have the business case analysis. This one issue in services could really attack the issue of contract duplication, then making the schedules more efficient, more effective, and enhancing the ability to provide value to customer agencies. So, and it's in the FAR. I go back to that. So industry is sitting out here saying, why can't GSA execute on this? This is basic blocking and tackling of federal procurement, and they haven't been able to address it.
Let's take a couple of steps back and look at this initiative
that
GSA.
Excited, right?
Well, let's take a look at the landscape here that we see on the modernization that they are undertaking. You write about the contract they have with the MITRE Corporation, and we have information about that at federalnewsradio.com. And they came to you and said, help us or take a look at the questions that we want to put on a survey for schedules contractors. What did you think of the direction that they wanted to take? Are they asking the right questions in order to get the right kind of feedback to then be able to give them the information that they need to take action?
I think they generally are. I think the important thing in talking to contractors and customer agencies is value. What is the value of the schedules? How can the schedules be improved to deliver best value products and solutions to customer agencies? You know, I think this GSA right now is, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog. GSA right now, from an industry perspective, appears to only want to focus on price on the GSA schedules contracts. Maybe that's why they haven't addressed other direct costs, because other direct costs are about a value solution for customer agencies to be able to get a complete solution to a service requirement. I've written about it before. It's a low price regardless approach that GSA has taken with regard to horizontal price comparisons, to the point we have companies indicating that they're trying to that GSA is attempting to drive prices down below cost of the product or good or services. And I think that's fundamentally because GSA looks at each item separately and what's the lowest price for that. When in the commercial marketplace, everybody understands that a company that provides a vast array of products and services, you know, has loss leaders, has other. It's a complete strategy to how you go to the market to be able to effectively compete, to be able to effectively deliver value, and that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the bottom barrel price in the marketplace, and you've got to match it. That goes to the issue of the supply chain in the long run, and whether companies are going to continue to want to do business with the federal government when there is this overarching emphasis on low price.
But don't you think at some point, Roger, the market will work in at least one way, and that is that companies will say, well, we just can't do that. We just are not going to be able to sell at that price. They'll pull out, and then the government will realize, well, then we can't do business this way, or we can't get this item or service for that price, and we've got to pay more. And the market then will correct itself.
I have to tell you, I've had more conversations with companies recently about the value proposition of actually doing business with the federal government. There is a lot more questioning of why does it make sense for my commercial business to be in the federal market these days. Because I think, the government, for a couple of years here, you recall folks from the government would say, well, we're the biggest buyer in the world. We buy the most stuff. We do this, that sort of language. When in reality, if you are a traditional commercial company that, provides best value products and services in the commercial marketplace, that brings innovation to the commercial marketplace, the federal government typically represents less than 1% of your total revenue. So it's got to make good business sense, and it's got to be, frankly, easy to compete in the federal market in order for companies to want to make that investment. And what we see is an ever-increasing set of requirements and compliance costs and oversight. At the same time, the federal government is continuing to try to drive price to low price regardless of terms and conditions. And that's not a recipe for long-term sustainment. And to your point, more often than not now, companies are asking me, why should I stay in the federal market? So it's a troubling development.
Roger Waldron's president of the Coalition for Government Procurement. And I think this conversation is healthy, and I'm not saying I disagree with your points. I understand I don't have any skin in the game because I'm not trying to run a company that at least derives part of my revenue from selling into the federal marketplace. But it strikes me, first of all, your point is very well taken about the dialogue we heard a couple of years back about we're the biggest customer. And I can't remember the last time I heard somebody talk in that manner. It seems like people have seen with the reticence among agencies to go to strategic sourcing. I mean, it's like pulling teeth. And with an unwillingness to do that, market power that the government expected to be able to leverage has never materialized. And I know a lot of people that think it never will materialize, Roger.
Well, I tend to agree with the your point about the market power, but as the government tries to figure this out, what is the damage that is done to the supply chain in the long run? Where does it make sense for commercial firms to do business with the federal government? That's sort of the big picture question. I will say, not to be completely negative today, but to the extent the government starts thinking and is thinking more about, let's take category management rather than strategic sourcing, I think that's a positive development in the sense that if the government is truly trying to figure out best practices for particular industry categories and how to acquire those products and goods and services and attempting to organize around that to maximize understanding of that market, I think that's a good thing. And I think that has the potential to address some of this. But at the same time, there's questions remain. Prices paid reporting, for example. If prices paid is only prices paid and doesn't report terms and conditions and other aspects, then you're not really understanding what the best practices are in that particular category. And just reporting prices paid, again, goes down a path of, why didn't I get that lower price? Well, maybe you didn't get it because you only bought 10 and this other customer agency bought 1,000. That type of information, is that going to be reported? How are they going to look at that? Are they going to look at statements of work, or is it merely just going to be prices paid? Those are the kind of questions around category management that I think are healthy to have a dialogue with the government about. Just going back to the point I started with, I think the consolidation of the services schedules is a positive thing, and we wholeheartedly support that. But at the same time, the frustration and the inability to address, something as straightforward as other direct costs on the GSA schedules, where there is a FAR clause, GSA is missing an opportunity to, provide better service for its customer agencies and a better return for the American taxpayer.
You write about the services schedule consolidation. It provides an important opportunity to address evergreen contracting, and you're setting up at the Coalition for Government Procurement an evergreen working group. What's that and what's that?
Evergreen contracting. Well, you think of evergreen, ever living.
Sure.
The idea that you could maintain the contracts in place and have the a 5-year option and evaluate and exercise that option without having a contract term. Like currently, the GSA schedule contracts are 20-year contracts. So at the end of that 20-year life cycle, when we're seeing it now, there are issues of transition of pre-existing orders. There's questions about whether pre-existing blanket purchase agreements under those contracts that are approaching year 20, can continue. Even though they've been competed and are in place, we think it's in the interest of the taxpayer that something that's been competed, that it should be able to extend, beyond that 20 years. And one way to address that is to essentially say no more 20-year limit, just every 5 years you go through an option exercise and a renewal. And the way GSA has structured the option exercises, in many cases, it's tantamount to the negotiation of a new contract because they do look at the pricing. They do take a look at, whether the pricing practices and policies of the company have changed. And based on whether there are changes or not, they do look at the pricing and try to renegotiate. So it's almost tantamount to a new contract in any event. So why have a 20-year limit on it? Let's keep these contracts in place. It'd be more that certainty. And that consistency, I think, would benefit contractors and benefit customer agencies as well.